This is Ranger Kidwell Ross, editor at WorldSweeper.com, and I have on the phone with me Kevin Kroger, and Kevin is president of DSS Sweeping Services located in Dayton, Ohio. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you.
Well, congratulations on being the March 2010 WorldSweeper.com Contractor of the Month. Let's hear about all the good things that you do at DSS and why you'd be Contractor of the Month. How did you actually get started in the sweeping business?
It was interesting. My background is an electrical engineer. My wife's background is in math, finance, and economics. And it was sort of always bred into me from my father to own my own business. And I didn't like the direction that the electrical industry was taking. So we started looking for a business, and we decided we'd be better off purchasing a pre-existing business and trying to start from scratch. So we looked for years for something that we thought was a good fit, and we came across a sweeping company in Dayton, Ohio. At the time, it was known as Dayton Sweeping Service. Eventually, we ended up buying it from the owner, Tom Kalman, who has a long history in the sweeping industry.
What year was that?
That would have been 1999.
Mm-hmm. So you've been at it more than a decade yourself.
Yes.
This. And what kind of market area do you cover?
It's basically southwest Ohio. We go over into Indiana just a little bit, and then into Kentucky, which would be the sort of the greater Cincinnati area in Kentucky.
You don't just specialize in a type of sweeping. You do parking lot sweeping, street sweeping, construction sweeping, and more. Is that right?
Correct. We do. You know, more and more it seems like people are looking for one-stop shop. Parking lot sweeping is certainly the backbone of the company. But we see a pretty decent expansion of construction sweeping. We also do snow removal, and we do landscape maintenance as well, and we do pressure washing and other services as our customers may need. And if we don't do it, we have a good core of subcontractors we can use to do, you know, paving jobs or seal coating, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And have you found that side of the business to be growing in the last 10 years?
We have, yeah, and it's more of, it's a good fit if you have somebody that maybe they're a out-of-town property manager and they don't really know where to turn other than, the Yellow Pages or some kind of a search, and they know the type of work we do, and we try to help them out as much as we can.
Let's talk about your wife, CEO of DSS. She's active in the company as well.
That's correct, and she has a strong background. Her degrees are in math, finance, and economics, and she was in healthcare. She did financial reporting for in 20 plus hospitals when she was in healthcare. So she has a pretty strong. I don't think we could afford to hire someone like her for the finance capability she has. As CEO, we are a woman-owned business.
One of the things that I talk to contractors about is getting involved with their customers through BOMA or Better Business Bureau, Chambers of Commerce, those sorts of things. I noticed that you are involved with the ODOT, Ohio Department of Transportation. I saw on your website.
Vicki was selected to work with ODOT, Ohio Department of Transportation, in a mentoring program. We are a DBE as well, which is a disadvantaged business enterprise, and a woman-owned business. So they link people up with mentors to help you figure out how to do business with the state and with the Department of Transportation. She's participating in that. We're also members of, I'm a member of BOMA. That's a nice fit. We get to go, get to meet with the building owners and managers, and that works well for us. And you get to work with them on a different level than trying to sell them something. You get to work side by side with them. We have a trade show coming up that we're participating in, and I'm on a committee for that to make sure the trade show goes smoothly. And that's a nice thing to do also. It's sort of a thing that you get involved in outside of your normal work day, so you get some different experiences.
Would you expand on that a little bit, and not necessarily with just BOMA, but I know that you're active in participating in industry issues, and for example, at the recent National Pavement Expo, you gave one of the modules, or were a moderator for one of the modules for the best practices 2010 for contract sweepers, and combining this with your membership in BOMA as an example, one of the things that I certainly tell contractors as editor of World Sweeper is it's fine to join something like BOMA or your Chamber of Commerce. Now you have the logo to put on your website and so forth. But in my opinion, it's not nearly as valuable if you don't actually go out and get involved, not only for the visibility and you know, the fact you actually learn who all the movers and shakers are, but for what you learn, too. Can you comment on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an invaluable experience. You know, I'm in BOMA, and most of our, or a lot of our customers are members of BOMA. One of the things that's very beneficial is you get to see what they think about, you know, what keeps them up at night and what they worry about. And it gives you a different appreciation other than your own little world of what you're living in and what you want to get accomplished. It sort of gives you a broader global view. I'm also a vice president of NAPSA, North American Power Sweeping Association. You know, with that, that experience has been invaluable also. Even I started as one of the general board members, but you get to see firsthand what other companies are doing across the country instead of just what's happening in Ohio. And it's and we try to, and as does World Sweeper, NAPSA also tries to put out information that says, this is what's coming. And, you know, in Ohio, we don't always see the same things that maybe California does or maybe the people on the East Coast do. And you get a new appreciation for the issues that other people have. And also you can learn from them and use that information to help your business and your personal development as well, and helps you with hiring people and how to do things that maybe you even hadn't even thought about you might be able to do better.
Well put. Have you seen any real changes in the last 10 years that you can say, here's a trend that I see the sweeping industry is definitely following, or points that you might recommend to other sweeping contractors that are earlier on starting out, not as experienced as you are?
Yeah, I think some of the trends I see, it seems like what I mentioned before, it seems like people are looking more and more for one-stop shop. And I think what happens is the property managers, there's less and less of them managing more properties. And I think if you can be, instead of just a vendor to them, more of a partner with them and help them do their jobs, I think it's very beneficial. And you also end up doing more work for them. And it's maybe things that you don't do, and it's okay to subcontract either, you know, jobs or services that you don't do. But they know they can trust you and then have your eyes on the site as well, especially if they're out of town. You know, they need to know things like, you know, light bulbs are burnt out or broken glass somewhere, or, you know, there's a door sitting open or people are illegally dumping, anything like that. That's one of the trends that I see, is just like any industry, I think today, people doing more with less people. You know, they're trying to do more jobs with less people, and I think we can all help our customers by just helping them out to see what maybe they can't or don't have time to see. I think maybe that's what, you know, you have the national so-called vendors that try to do everything for everybody. The difference is they're typically out of town or out of state trying to manage remotely, and that's a different sort of model. And I think us being local, we can do a better job of taking care of our customers than somebody out of state.
Well, there's no question, all other things equal, that has to be the case. Well, what is your pricing model that you would recommend for people who are out there and don't have other services that they offer and they need to subcontract them? Or, you know, typically a sweeping contractor, when he wants to expand out, might expand out with pressure washing, striping is easy to get into, but then customers need other things. How do you go about that when you set up a subcontract relationship with other organizations that do something that your customers need that you don't provide?
If we needed seal coating, for example, we don't offer that service currently, but we work for seal coaters with our construction sweeping. So we would use guys like that, and it's really, it just takes time to develop relationships with them. They understand what you're doing, and a lot of times you can pre-negotiate that, hey, we'd like to make a few bucks on this job as well, and it's maybe a contact or a job that they wouldn't have had the opportunity to even bid.
Plus, they're not having a marketing expense to go get that job, so they have more margin
right.
on it and can provide the customer with the basically the same price and are able to pay you for your time as well.
Right, and you know, and a lot of times we don't try to hide it from our customers that we're subcontracting it, and they're okay with it. They value the relationships that we've formed over years to get the jobs done. And I think in the end, they end up, our bids are always competitive, would be competitive anyway if they just went to open market to get it, just because of the relationships and the added value we provide by finding the right people for them, people that we've worked with and we have a history with. Instead of just somebody they've called out of the blue.
Plus, when you've worked for somebody, you can pretty much tell who's got their act together and who doesn't,
right.
who the real pros are, and that's an advantage you could bring to the table for your customer as well.
And I think that's a lot of times why they appreciate it, because it's not just somebody that they found, you know, either on the internet or in a phone book somewhere, somebody that we can say, and our reputation's on the line with them also, if we were to pick somebody just out of the blue that didn't perform, that would hurt our reputation as well. So we're careful to make sure we have good subcontractors. If we do, and we don't do a lot of that work, but if we were to use subcontractors, we're careful to use people that we know are going to do a good job.
That makes perfect sense. Is there anything else you can offer that might be helpful hints to other contractors out there, that things that you've learned, success factors in your business?
I think it's really all about having the right people working for you. It may seem like you have an operator and, you know, they're people you got to hire and you need to have them, but if you having the right operators and having the right people answering the phone makes a huge difference. Makes your job a lot easier, makes your life a lot easier. Makes the customer experience better, and that's really what you're after in the long run, is the best possible customer experience, so they recommend you and keep using you. I think so many times in my life when I call a company and ask for whatever it is, it doesn't matter what the service is or product is, if you have a good experience, you're likely to recommend them to somebody. We get people that call here because of our name with DSS Sweeping Service. We get people that call seeing if we can repair their vacuum cleaner. And instead of just saying, no, we don't do that, we keep the number of the vacuum cleaner repair company close by so we can recommend to them who they call. So, because you never know how that could end up benefiting you in the future. They may say, hey, you know, I remember that company. They were nice to deal with, and even though I didn't need their service, they helped me out, and then maybe they pass our name along to somebody else. But I think it's all just about helping people out, being helpful. So you get a good name in the area you serve.
Well, I think that's really an excellent point. And, of course, the vacuum cleaner service people may get a call for somebody who needs parking lot sweeping, too, for all of that.
That's correct.
And be happy to.
I don't know if they ever have or not, and we've never told them we refer people.
Well, maybe that's the next point in the triangle, is to let them know what you're doing there, too. The big picture, though, of what you just said, is that you're thinking of every way you can to have your customer's best interest in mind, and in fact prospects' best interest, and anybody in the industry that you might touch, you've taken steps here to do for them what you can. You're not saying, well, you know, I'll give you this information if you give me $5, or if you promise to use me in the future. You're saying, here's what we're like. And let the chips fall where they may. I'm reminded of that old saying where they say paybacks are a bitch, and I've always felt that that's wrong. Those people are doing the wrong things. Paybacks are great.
Right.
You just need to be doing the right things, and those paybacks are the ones that you'll get. And that's just, that all speaks back to ethics and what you're. You know, your integrity in operating your business. So I'm really glad to hear that. Your module at the National Pavement Expo was on how to hire the right people.
Right.
Are there any, candid things, overview that you'd say about that?
I facilitated it. It wasn't really a presentation I gave, so I learned as much as everybody that came to the table there. And I think some of the things that are good that I took away from it is spend time up front hiring people. It's definitely worth the time and the effort. And there's a lot of methods that people use. And some are for each individual. Some will be better than others. But whatever you use, spend the time and do it right. I mean, the other thing I've learned over the years is just because you hire somebody, if it ends up that they're not right. And it's not necessarily your fault that you hired the wrong person, but try to learn from what you did and make your process better. So eventually you end up with a team of A players and everybody's doing what they can to make sure the customer has the best experience. It all gets back to that, really. One of the things that I know we do, and we learned this from Mark Carter of Bill Sweeping in I think he's in Orange County, California.
He is.
Is we put a recording up when we're hiring people. And one of the things we learned was, a lot of times a sweeper operator most likely does not have a resume. So they're going to come in and fill out an application. And what we've learned is if you take phone calls for people, the first few phone calls, you'll be pretty thorough in explaining what the job's about and that sort of thing. And by the time you get to the 15th or 20th call, you're saying, come in and fill out an application and you're finished. That's not necessarily
right.
The right thing to do.
Because that may be your guy.
Right. And it's, I think it's important to say, to give them as much information as you can. So what we do is we record a message and tell them the good and the bad about the job. One of the things I think that happens across the industry is companies hire people, and then that individual doesn't work out for whatever reason. We've had people quit because they didn't realize they were going to be alone in a truck. So we try to tell everybody up front what the job's like. The good and the bad, and almost emphasize the bad parts of it so they know what they're getting into to make sure they're going to stick. And even then, it's not 100%, but I'd rather have 3 good applicants than 40 okay applicants and try to find the 3 good ones out of that group.
Well, that's really excellent advice. And I recall at one of the National Pavement Expo roundtables, one of the contractors insisted that they had clocked that the training process for their employees by the time that all was said and done was in, I believe it was $10,000. It was a large multiple of thousands of dollars that it cost you. And so anything you can do to get the right person to start with, it sure makes sense. However many thousands of dollars those are, that pales in comparison to the damage that a bad employee can do when you leave them on the job.
Right.
And, they're not doing a good job, they're dissatisfied, or, whatever the situation is. One of the things that you've done with a recent hiring process that is different from anything you've done before was to use LinkedIn. How did that work?
Well, we started using, I started speaking to people in a business group I'm in. I'm an entrepreneurs organization, and it's a organization for small business owners. Completely separate subject, but I was speaking with some of the members of my forum in there, and they suggested instead of doing the traditional monster search, which would have killed me with the number of applications or resumes we would have gotten, and instead of that, or putting an ad in the paper, or hiring a headhunter, or any other thing you could do, is to try alternative methods. And one of the things we used was LinkedIn, and we also used Craigslist. And I had some really good applicants actually from both of them. The LinkedIn tended to be a higher level applicant, and we were looking for a salesperson to head up sales for our company. We've never had a salesperson before. And the response and the quality of the applicant we got from LinkedIn was I was very impressed with. It was great. So we used that, and we also switched to a new, I don't know if you call it an interviewing method, but we switched. There's a fellow named Jeff Smart that wrote a book called Who, and he has a whole method for going through a hiring process to increase your chances of hiring the right person the first time. And so we use that, this method that he has in this book that he wrote. And I was very happy with that, and specifically for professional employees, you know, your salespeople, or, you know, if you needed to hire operations people, I was very impressed with that. We haven't tried it on operators because we haven't needed to with the economy. We really haven't experienced any turnover. But I'm looking at ways to maybe use that method also when we hire operators.
Well, I think operators wouldn't tend to be involved probably as much with the Internet, let alone LinkedIn. But Craigslist, certainly had fun.
We're actually looking for a landscape foreman or supervisor. We call them team leaders, actually. And we're looking for a landscape team leader now, and we're advertising on Craigslist for that. And that's a good way to go, because everybody today, it seems like everybody has Internet access, and everybody looks at Craigslist. And, you know, it's a nice way to go, and you get pretty quick results with it, too. I put an ad up on Craigslist, and I had within a couple hours several responses, so that was nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a lot of difference in the old days of putting an ad in the newspaper, waiting, you know, 3 or 4 days before it got in there. Quite a bit of expense to do that. Usually takes a day or two to cancel once you find who you want, and it's a new world out there.
Yes, it is.
And this book, what are the basics that Jeff Smart tells you to do?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the big things that he has you do is, it's a very specific, he gives you specific questions to ask, and what he has in it, a lot of it is, you weed a lot of people out with a phone interview. One of the things that he emphasizes is that you go to previous bosses and ask them to rate them. And he asks you, what you tell the prospect is, hey, I want to have you help me set up phone interviews with your previous employers. And you're very adamant about doing that. And then what would they say about you? And I can tell you that sort of creates a contract honesty there, where the prospect is going to tell you maybe a little more realistically what this previous employer would say, or previous supervisor would say. I can tell you, in the past, I would have accepted a diversion onto a different topic. And in this method, you don't do that, and you stick with it. And it was nice, because I was able to weed out a lot of people that I would normally have brought in for an interview. And who knows, maybe even ultimately ended up with that wouldn't have worked out. I guess something else I would recommend for people is to go to the NPE shows. It's unbelievable how much you learn from just talking to other guys that have been in the industry a lot longer than you have, or even new people. I know I learn things from people that are just starting out all the time, because they're in a different position in their life, and things that maybe we've forgotten to look out for, they have to look out for every day, because they are just starting out. They're seeing trends maybe that we don't see. I just can't tell you how much value I personally get out of going to those shows and talking to people and reading the newsletters and picking up the phone and calling people if you have a question. I think overall the industry is very helpful. Everybody I've talked to has been very helpful when you ask them a question about, you know, what processes they use or what experiences they've had, so you can either try to mimic it or avoid it.
I'd sure echo that as someone who's, I've been to the National Pavement Expo pretty much every year for 20 years, and it is amazing the amount of information that flows there. It's absolutely nonstop, because you have the seminars, you have the trade show floor, and then you have the bar, shall we say, in the evenings, it's just nonstop. Everybody that's there is doing the best they can to help other people and to learn at the same time. So it's really an amazing business investment, and how anybody can think that it doesn't pay, especially these days when if you're a NAPSA member, you end up with free seminars and so forth too. It's clearly money well spent.
I agree.
Are there any other tips, techniques, items that you'd like to bring out here? Success factors you found at DSS. How about the transition to have parking lot sweeping, construction sweeping, and street sweeping? At what point should somebody in the parking lot sweeping business consider getting into construction, consider getting into street sweeping, in your opinion?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer that, Ranger. We have, when we bought the company, we did construction sweeping.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a completely separate company. You could almost separate the company just like you would, say, landscaping. It could be its own complete division, and,
mm-hmm.
and we share some resources, obviously. Construction sweeping is a completely different animal. For us, for the most part, it's done during the day, while parking lot sweeping is, you know, mostly done at night. And
do you use some of the same equipment that's used at night is used during the day for construction sweeping, or do you separate out
that? A little bit, but mostly no. Mostly for construction sweeping, we use broom trucks.
Okay.
And mostly for our parking lot sweeping, we use air trucks. Now, we will run a broom truck on a parking lot, you know, in the spring after the snow all melts and all the plow stuff is finished.
The spring cleanup part.
But for the most part, it's almost separate. I tell you what's hard about construction sweeping is the equipment's very expensive, and at least in our area, it's mostly call-out work. Sort of like if you needed a plumber, you'd call him and say, "Hey, I have a broken pipe or clogged drain or whatever it is." It makes it difficult to make that leap because of the cost of the equipment. I would say the operators on construction equipment need to be trained more. They can damage the equipment more and damage, you know, where they sweep, the environment they sweep in a lot more also, just because of the nature of that equipment. It's a good question. I'm not sure when you make that leap. I'd probably make it if I had requests for it and you knew that you had people lined up to actually use your service.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know there's areas of the country, I know California has a lot of homeowner associations that put the bill for the sweep. That's not the case in my area. There's very few privately owned homeowners associations, you know, where they're responsible for the streets and that sort of thing. You have condos and that sort of thing. So I would also tell you that the maintenance on those vehicles is significantly more intense than what they are what it is on parking lot sweepers.
Plus, most of them you need a CDL driver, so that's another expense.
That's true. Now, today with the economy, you can find CDL drivers, but you're just beginning to train them when they start. It's almost impossible to hire somebody that knows how to run a sweeper.
Mm-hmm.
It's very rare to find somebody that knows how to run a sweeper that is available in the open market. Generally, for us, we've taken guys that are good sweeper operators, and then if they don't have a CDL, we send them to school to get their CDL, and then they become operators here, you know, and they can run the bigger trucks that require the CDLs.
Mm-hmm. Perhaps as a final question, in terms of street sweeping, have you seen a movement toward privatization of sweeping?
There's a little bit of it. There's not. It's mostly. It's sort of a. The bigger cities have their own street sweepers. The city of Cincinnati, I do believe, now hires out a good portion of their street sweeping. So I think it's coming. I think it's probably, Ohio tends to lag behind other areas, but I think it's coming. The coast probably, east and west coast probably have it happening quicker. Almost like anything, I think it's going to continue to occur. The municipalities just don't have the way to maintain everything. You know, they can't have the overhead of all the staff to maintain more equipment than maybe what they can get by without. And sweeping typically isn't done year-round in a lot of municipalities, so they might sweep everything two or three times a year. So, yeah, I see it coming. We haven't seen a ton of it yet, but we've seen some of it.
Mm-hmm. Is there anything else we should cover here, or do you think we've done it?
Not that I can think of.
Well, thanks very much, and again, congratulations on being Contractor of the Month for March 2010. We've been speaking with Kevin Kroger. Kevin's president of DSS Sweeping Service, and they're located in Ohio. Thanks again, Kevin.
Thanks, Ranger.